This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Naomi Moon Siegel. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio today Naomi Moon Siegel. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to have you in the studio and great to talk shop with you. I'm going to tell folks now, NaomiMoonSiegel.com is the name of her website. Naomi is a graduate of Oberlin Conservatory, which I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I didn't go to Oberlin, but I spent a lot of time there seeing shows when I was living in Cleveland.
Oh, and, yeah.
So very familiar with the great Oberlin Conservatory. And Naomi is a composer, trombonist, producer, and music educator. I'm taking this from your own bio, whose work is geared towards creating authentic expression and connection. And let's just start right there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I think I was drawn to playing music at a young age, especially jazz when I started playing trombone, because I thought, oh, wow, cool. I can play whatever I want to and still be in a band connecting with other people. And I was always drawn to really expressive musicians like There's this video I really liked watching when I was a kid called Sisters, and it featured Patti LaBelle, Gladys Knight, and Dionne Warwick.
Oh, hell yes.
And Gladys in particular, like, really stole my heart on that one when I was in, like, seventh grade, and she sings this version of I Will Survive, and it's just, like, so emotive and so expressive. And so my whole musical journey has been really wanting to emulate that kind of expression and create community in the meantime and collaborate with folks. And that's when I find music to be most meaningful for me. And as an educator, that's the kind of experience that I like cultivating for students as well.
Cool. Let's go deeper with the connection end of things on that and the community. And how does that happen for you?
I think it's about being vulnerable and breaking open and being yourself. I found that in the Seattle music scene, where I feel like I really kind of came into my own, I found a lot of environments there where I could do that. Whereas earlier, even at Oberlin and when I lived in Oakland, I found myself stifled by the culture, specifically the jazz culture and the jazz. I was a jazz major at Oberlin, and I found it, while I loved the music, I found it really challenging to feel like I could be myself. I was like, wanted to learn the tradition and learn these bebop lines and do all this stuff, but I also didn't feel like I could really be emotive while I was doing that, or it was more challenging for me to find my own voice in that. And so while I love that music and I like playing it and I do think I can be expressive while doing that, I found that more original music and creative music allows for that. So in Seattle, I was doing a lot of playing with either like world dance bands like West African music and salsa and stuff like that and reggae, or experimental jazz bands and indie groups like that. And so those are the places that I have found I could really just be creative and be myself. And by doing that, I felt like I was able to be my full self as a human being, not just musically. Mm-hmm. And that's where the connections come for me. So like, in this album that I just put out last year, the goal for me was to build relationships with the people that I got to play on my album. There's 13 other musicians.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. And I could get really caught up on like the product, right? Like, oh, is it going to be good? Like, mm-hmm. and sometimes I would. And then whenever I would step back and be like, hey, let me just be with Sean right now, like wherever he's at, and focus on the relationship and the process of making this together, everything always was better. For mm-hmm. me, for him, we had a better, you know, connection musically, and it was a more nourishing part of the process. So the connection piece for me is like showing up as your full authentic self, being mm-hmm. who you are, not only as an instrumentalist in my case, but also as a human being. And I think I was exposed to a lot of musicians early on where I didn't feel like I could be myself. A jazz culture, for example, I think is largely misogynistic in a lot of ways.
Can I ask about that?
Yeah.
What that was like for you?
And it was hard for me to be seen as like a regular normal student at Oberlin. I was a girl. I was a woman. And so I was not treated like my male peers by the all-male faculty. And so it's been part of my journey to be like, oh wait, I don't want to play music with people like that. And I don't have to.
At
first,
option,
I thought I had to, you know, uh-huh. I thought I had to pay my dues and play with whoever I could. And I'd learned a lot, but one of the best lessons I learned was that there are good people out there who I can be myself. I can be a woman. I can be queer, and I can be a trombonist, and people don't need to question that, or I don't need to prove myself.
Thank you.
Do you think that there is a reluctance, and I don't know if it's just strictly in the jazz world, but I'm wondering if that's one of the domains where it's a challenge, where even still, and it's amazing and sad for me to hear you say those things, because you would think that that's a fairly progressive mindset in the jazz world. But what I'm getting at is the concept of there's still being some reluctance to accept a woman as a player.
Right.
There's, you know what I'm saying?
And I
know that that's certainly been the case in, say, rock music.
Yep.
Even, you know, Bonnie Raitt. And that, yeah. Granted, that's, you know, we're going back decades now, and she's paved the way for that.
Yeah.
But, you know what I'm saying? Do you think that was part of the thing that you, part of the resistance that you felt?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, I mean, even today, and it is less so, but if you were to ask somebody, okay, what are your stereotypes of a woman in jazz? What are they going to say? Mm-hmm. They're going to say she's a vocalist.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a pianist.
Maybe like a sexual object. You know, there's a lot of imagery out there still, yeah, where I see women portrayed in jazz as these curvy dress wearing. And, you know, that's fine if you want to be, if that's who you are, but that's not, yeah, who all women are in jazz, of course. And so... yeah, there's a lot of pervasive toxic stereotypes about women in jazz that influence myself to this day. Like, I went to school and I pretty much only studied male composers, right? And so I have a bias that women aren't as good at composing as men. Like, mm-hmm, I just realized that not too long ago when this woman gave me her CD and I had this, and I was like noticing my thoughts and, mm-hmm, thinking, oh, that's whack. I want to, you know, and that's what you have to do. Like, you have to notice what your own biases are and your stereotypes are, and then you can start to reverse them and create new stories and new, mm-hmm, narratives that get rid of those toxic myths.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Naomi Moon Siegel. One of the things I wanted to ask about in terms of your compositional style, and again, I'm going to harken back to your own bio here, this is pertaining to Shoebox View, which I believe is your most recent recording project, correct?
Right.
I mean, I know you've been involved in a number of them, and this is your first under your own name?
Correct.
Okay. And one of the descriptions I came across was cinematically combining folk melodies with fantastical soundscapes and patient arrangements.
Yeah.
So you've got good stuff here for good fodder for the interview right there on your bio. Talk about that a little bit, what some of those words mean to you in terms of your compositional style.
Yeah. So almost all of the tunes on this album I wrote at a time where I chose to write music every day. So I picked 3 weeks, let's say, and I said, okay, I'm going to make sure that I write something every day. It doesn't have to be my magnum opus or whatever, but I just want to get, in the process, in the habit of being a composer more and practice that muscle. And I want to do it in a way where I'm not trying to fit into any kind of box and just really kind of channel whatever I'm hearing. And so I have these notebooks full of musical ideas, some of which I've done nothing with and some of which became music on this album. And a lot of the music that I was listening to during that time were more simplistic kind of folk melody kind of music, like Gillian Welch and M. Ward. And Joni Mitchell has always been a huge influence on me. And the patient part, I think, I get from... I'm inspired by Joni Mitchell in that way. She's got this way of, you know, like A Case of You or something, where she's just so patiently strumming and going with the groove. And so as I was choosing the songs to put on this album, I found myself going for the ones that had more simplistic melodies and going against the grain of modern jazz, which often seems very virtuosic and verbose and, mm-hmm, and complex. I found myself wanting to be a little more down to earth with it. Mm. And if you listen to the album, you'll notice there is some improvisation and some soloing, but it's not in your typical jazz way where it's like, let me play all my stuff. I mean, mm-hmm, not all jazz is like that. But
there's a lot of muscle flexing.
Sometimes there's muscle flexing, and I like that too, and I do it too sometimes. But I just found I wanted to be on the more subtle side in general for this body of music, and the soundscape part for me is just a way that I've really come to enjoy playing music over the last, I'd say, 5 years of creating ambient sounds and loops and listening, being inspired a lot by the natural world. There's a song on there called Casa de Aves, and you actually hear these bird sounds from this house I was staying in Costa Rica when I was writing a lot of this music. And so I love I'll just take my iPhone and record whatever, and sometimes it ends up on my albums and sometimes it doesn't, but it's just really good inspiration either way.
Naomi, I know one thing that we share is an appreciation, if not a passion, for listening experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk to you about this in kind of a broad sort of philosophical sense of how, well, let me just ask you this. Why is that so important to you? A listening experience. Why is that so important?
Well,
maybe we should define what a listening experience is.
What do you mean by listening experience?
I mean by that experiences where an audience is there specifically to listen to music and not for it to be subservient to some other purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just find that the acoustics of the music, I mean, on a very basic level, speak better when there's not a lot of crowd noise and you can really hear what's going on. There's a lot of reasons. I think there's an opportunity for a deeper kind of connection between a performer and audience members when there isn't that extra ambient kind of background noise going on. And it's a real exchange. And that's, as a performer, that's my favorite. And even as an audience member too, is when it feels like there's an exchange back and forth between performer and audience member. And it's not just a spectacle for ambient sake. And I think, and that, you know, there's live music for lots of reasons, and that's a beautiful thing. And I think sometimes it's okay to have live music to just enliven an atmosphere and be in a bar and have that. There's nothing wrong with that, but I just really value those intimate exchanges. And the art form of music is so fleeting in itself, you know? So to really be able to bear witness to that, I think, is a really special thing.
Mm-hmm. This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Naomi Moon Siegel. This is kind of a stock question that I've been asking recently. I'm kind of adapting it to the different folks that I'd speak with. But when was the first time that you played the trombone and realized you were either getting people's attention or connecting with people on some level?
Yeah, it was either fifth or sixth grade, and it was the first year my elementary school had a jazz band, and we played this song. We played Louie Louie, you know,
nice.
Classic.
Nice.
And we all got to solo on it, and to me, as a fifth grader, I felt like the audience just went nuts. Like, they just loved it, and they were screaming, and it just felt like this amazing experience, both connecting with audience, but also some of my good friends who actually still play music were in that band as well. And so that kind of hooked me at a young age.
Right.
Louie Louie, woo!
Thank you. NaomiMoonSiegel.com is the name of the website. I'm going to spell that for our listeners. N-A-O-M-I, Moon, M-O-O-N, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, NaomiMoonSiegel.com is the name of the website. And the most recent recording is Shoebox View. Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure talking shop with you, Naomi, and I hope we get a chance to visit down the road.
Yeah, thank you so much, John.
This is John Floridas. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Naomi Moon Siegel. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online at Facebook as well. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.